Batson.
Well, greetings to everybody on the webcam. Greetings to everybody in the room today. Great to see you. And greetings to, got a guest here. Not really a guest. We've got Mr. Jerry Fisher. Those of you in Bismarck may remember him. So Jerry Fisher's up to visit, and got some other visitors in town as well. So glad to have you all with us. Wanted to begin by turning over to the book of Matthew today. So we'll begin the sermon in the book of Matthew. And this is a two-part split sermon. And so rather than play a sermonette video or present a sermonette, I opted to just do two split sermons. So this will be part one, and the second message will be part two. So they'll go right together. The beginning of this message, just giving you a chance to get there, starts in Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24, and we will begin verse 21 and 22. So Matthew 24, verse 21 and 22. Matthew 24, verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So we have this prophecy here, Jesus Christ speaking, and he's saying there will be some type of noticeable worldwide event that has an effect on the entire earth. And he says nothing like it has ever been seen before. And he says nothing like it will ever be seen again. And he uses the word, or Matthew was inspired to record the word in Greek for tribulation, which is thlipsis, thlipsis, simply means just that, tribulation. Affliction, distress, heavy pressure, persecution, burden, suffering. That's what that Greek word for tribulation means. And Jesus says it will be, quote unquote, great. Not great as in, wow, this is wonderful, I'm so glad I'm being persecuted, but great as in the degree or the amount. And he said it will affect the entire world, not just one place. Let's go over now to Revelation. Revelation chapter 12. We'll go back to the book of Revelation. Revelation 12, Revelation 12, verse 10 through 13. Revelation 12, verse 10. Revelation 12, 10. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. For the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. Now when the dragon saw he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. So we see Satan cast down to the earth, the accuser of our brethren, the instigator, prince of the power of the air, and he brings about with him intense pain, suffering, agony. Yet in the midst of all this worldwide suffering and persecution, there remains a promise. And that's found in the next verse. It says, verse 14, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the presence of the serpent. So we have, during this 3.5 year period of time of intense tribulation, a promise of protection. A promise of deliverance. A promise of a place of escape. Sometimes referred to place of safety. And so the title of today's sermon is The Doctrine of the Place of Safety, Part 1. Doctrine of the Place of Safety, and obviously Part 2 will be in the second split sermon. Now this phrase, this term, place of safety, it's a concept, it's a phrase many of us have heard about over the years. Something we have likely seen referred to in church literature time to time. It's a phrase that is based on this verse in Revelation 12. It has sparked numerous different questions, a lot of speculation, a lot of misconceptions, often leading to different expectations. Maybe you've wondered. Maybe you've speculated. Maybe you have formed even your own opinions about this place of protection, her place, the place of safety. Where it is, what it will be, who will be there, when it will occur, what it means. Where did this idea, where did this doctrine of a place of safety come from anyway? Well, this doctrine of a place of safety has only been around for about 45 years. Now, the phrase itself is not new. The phrase itself has been found in some of your Bibles in the marginal notes by the commentators. And they'll use that phrase, place of safety, referring to God. God is a place of safety for his saints. One of them, most notably, is Bullinger's commentary on the Bible. And they'll typically just refer, well, God is a place of safety. And you can just reference Psalm 91, verse 1 and 2. It talks about God being, I'll go to God who's in the secret place. He'll be your stronghold. And there's a number of other a dozen other verses that talk about that. But as it relates to the Church of God, this phrase, place of safety, we go back to 1920s, 1930s. God began working with and through Herbert W. Armstrong to revive the work of the Church of God in the modern era. Now, I spent a lot of time digging into this topic of this doctrine of a place of safety. Looking at all the different background of it, looking at the history of it, where it came from, looking at the different angles, checking out what different Church of God groups teach on the subject. Looking at the different facets of it so that I can present to you today the truth of what the Bible actually says and what the Bible doesn't actually say. This place of safety doctrine grew. It became well known within the Church of God in the mid to late 1900s. But when was the first time it was used? Well, that would be 1941. First time place of safety as a phrase was used in Radio Church of God. Not Worldwide Church of God at that point. Radio Church of God, in fact, it was used two times in 1941. Used on a Radio Church of God broadcast by Mr. Armstrong. And also, that was before he was doing the World Tomorrow broadcast, just speaking, and that was when they had music at the beginning of it and everything. So I listened to some of that last night. And also, it was found in the 1941 September-October edition of The Plain Truth. So those two places, 1941, first time the phrase place of safety was used in the Church of God, as far as any records know. And I consulted with some Church of God historian as well, and he had a later date than that, and so this was the earliest he had ever heard of. And this is just a snippet of what it said in that Plain Truth magazine. I'll read it for you. Mr. Armstrong wrote, "The prophecy of Revelation 12 shows that just as many of the saints known in history as the Waldenses fled to a place of safety from the Middle Age persecution, so many of God's people are again now to flee under God's direction and protection to a place of escape. Some of God's people shall have to sacrifice their lives for their faith, yet others shall escape. Thus God's true people fall into two classes. What shall determine into which class you shall be? Remember, there is no respect of persons with God. Therefore, he shall not decide into which class you find yourself. You yourself must decide. The question is, how? Very compelling writer, Mr. Armstrong. Now, some in the church have claimed that Mr. Armstrong got this idea from the Seventh-day Adventists. That was not part of their original teachings, and it's not part of their updated teachings. That's not even part of their teachings now. Their official teachings don't include that idea. They include the spiritual idea of God being everybody's ultimate place of safety. Now, there may be some individual teachers who have their own ideas, who may put their own ideas out there, but in terms of what the SDAs actually believe, they don't profess that. Some people have said, well, it was Mrs. Armstrong that gave him the idea. That can't be substantiated either. So this is a concept that it seems as though God inspired him to come up with. Now, different evangelical sects, some have referred to the rapture as a place of safety, a type of a place of safety. This idea being that, well, believers, they'll be whisked away and kept safe up in heaven with Jesus Christ when he comes near the earth, and he's not here yet, and so they'll be protected up in heaven from the different troubles, from the different suffering, but we don't see that in the Bible. Now, often the concept of a place of safety, it can be misunderstood. Often people have misunderstood its nature, its location, its purpose. And so people will ask questions like, well, where is it? Is it a physical location? Will it involve being hidden somewhere in the wilderness? Or will there be a special group of people? Or does God just protect everybody wherever they are at any time? And what's it talking about? And so the purpose today of these two split sermons really is not to speculate. Now, speculation is good. It's enjoyable sometimes, but the purpose of these messages is simply to clarify the purpose, timing, criteria, biblical precedent for an end time place of escape, place of safety, place of protection. So that begs the question then, protection from what? What does one need protecting from? Well, plenty of stuff, right? But during the end times, you know, the Bible speaks about many different threats. Physical threats, spiritual threats. First few verses that we read today spoke about a terrible series of events to come upon the entire earth. And what we notice, these are not ordinary bad events. It's not like everybody just all over the world all of a sudden gets a flat tire. That would be unfortunate. That's not what the Great Tribulation is about. These are events which are a direct result of basically two things. A direct result of Satan's hatred for mankind and for God. And number two, a result of God bringing the age of man's self-rule to a conclusion. Those are why those end-time events are coming on the whole earth. Let's go now in your Bibles to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah 30, verse 5. Jeremiah 5, verse 30, verse 5, through the beginning of verse 7. For thus says the Eternal, we have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask now and see whether a man is ever in labor with child. So why do I see every man with his hands on his loins, like a woman in labor, and all faces turned pale? Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. And it is the time of, what? Jacob's trouble. Time of Jacob's trouble. It talks about after that going on into the millennium. Now, while the end time events will affect the entire world, Jeremiah's message, we know, was specifically given to two entities, two separate entities. Two individual groups of people to Judah, modern-day nation of Israel, primarily the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, as well as Israel. And then that would be the other 10 tribes scattered throughout the rest of the world, wherever they happen to be, France, Belgium, Finland, America, United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, etc. Now, the Great Tribulation, it spans 3.5 years, and it is made up of two parts. Now, the first 2.5 years of the Great Tribulation are what is referred to as Satan's wrath. Now, the first 2.5 years of the Great Tribulation are Satan's wrath against humanity. And then the final year of that Great Tribulation, that last year of the 3.5 years, that's referred to as either the wrath of the Lamb or the day of the Lord. That is God's judgment upon the earth. We've covered that in other sermons. Now, once this fifth seal of Revelation, it opens up, the Great Tribulation begins, and the clock starts ticking. The Great Tribulation continues as the final two seals after the seven trumpets and the seven bowls of wrath and heavenly signs, all those things take place afterwards. Now, place of safety, that is the focus of the sermon today, so I'm not going into the other things. Place of safety, or place of protection, or whatever you want to call it, is a place of protection from a number of different things, terrible events that are going to come on the earth. So typically at the Feast of Trumpets, we'll go through some of these end time events. And I'm not discounting those, that just isn't the focus of this message. Some of those events, possible nuclear war and fallout from that. Devastating global conflict could lead to widespread destruction, could lead to radiation poisoning, could lead to loss of life. But we're talking about those prophesied end time events that are very clearly laid out. Things which will happen. Stars falling from the sky. Different things that seem to be like meteors coming out of the sky. Other things which could cause environmental collapse. We know that there will be significant death of sea life before all the sea life is killed. First, starting with a third of all sea life, all fish, all other creatures that live there. The rest of the environment, a third of the trees, right, burned up, and then eventually all the green. You also have the locusts, the end time locusts, eating all the green things that hadn't been destroyed before by the other plagues and other different things. And so, in addition to some of those environmental factors that we would need protection from, also there are prophesied diseases, plagues, famines, pestilences, things that are going to ravage planet Earth, bring about significant death, loss of life, to the point where people aren't just saying, oh, well, you know, there's this conspiracy theory that maybe, you know, COVID might be killing some people, but I haven't really seen. No, it's going to be like, wow, we are watching people die around us. There are significant things happening on the world scene. This is undeniable. Yet some people will still deny. But those things will be undeniable. They will be miraculous. They will not just be bad things that happen. They are going to be supernatural bad things that happen. We know there will also be political and social upheaval that we will need, God's people will need protection from. Different tyrannical regimes rising up leads to persecution, death, especially for those who resist, especially for those who refuse to comply with the beast system, refuse to get the mark of the beast. But make no mistake, we should not make the mistake of thinking that this is just another war, or these things, well, these will pass. These type of end time things, these negative, terrible, awful depths of horrors which will happen in the end time are not just some other war. They are the worst thing to ever happen to mankind. There's only one the worst that you can have. If you have multiple the worsts, it's no longer the worst, right? You can only have one worst kind to ever affect mankind. You can only have one worst kind that will ever affect mankind. And I've heard people say, well, it's happening now. Great! If this is the Great Tribulation, I don't want to be protected. I got internet. I've got anything I can want. Steak. I've got propane. I've got electricity. I don't want to be protected from that. This is not the Great Tribulation. No way. Not possible. And people will say, well, other events have happened in history, and maybe it's already passed. Is this the millennium? I hope not. If this is the best God can do, that's pretty poor. So the Great Tribulation has not yet happened, and it's not happening yet. It will. It will be a wake-up call. And at its core, this future time of war, this future time of persecution, it is one that is spiritual in nature and divine in scale. Not something that human beings could just bring about on our own. And it's important to understand the true nature of the crisis, being spiritual at its core. It's a battle over truth, a battle over morality, a battle over worship, as that end time beast power eventually seeks to impose its corrupt system over the entire world. This is a spiritual war where you, me, God's people, wherever they and we are, must stand up for the truth. We must stand firm against the forces of evil. And a place of safety will serve as both a refuge from physical dangers and from spiritual delinquencies. It will serve as a spiritual sanctuary. Going back to Revelation, Revelation 13, notice this beast power, the prophecy about it as it begins to get set up. Revelation 13, beginning in verse 1. Revelation 13, verse 1. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. On his horns, 10 crowns. On his head, a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, his authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. They worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? He was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. He was given authority to continue, notice, 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with you and I, with the saints, those who are baptized and have God's Spirit dwelling in them, and to overcome them. Authority given him over every tribe, tongue, nation, all who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. This beast power will enforce a system of morality and a government that goes against God's truth for 42 months, 3.5 years. It will lead to widespread suffering for those who refuse to submit. You can note Daniel 7, verse 25. Talks about that 3.5 year period. Those who stand up for righteousness, those who stand up for morality, those who stand up for the truth, they will face intense persecution. They will be tormented. That's when the place of safety comes him. God will, God will provide protection for his people. He will provide a place of escape, a way of escape, for those who are faithful and stand firm in the truth. The idea of a place of safety is important because it is biblical. And a place of protection, a place of safety, provides a refuge from this prophesied beast power and the intense suffering that will take place during the Great Tribulation. So the next question then is, when will it occur? When will this Great Tribulation take place? We want to know, because a lot of people ask that question. And the timing of the Great enactment, I guess I could say, of the place of safety is closely tied to key prophetic events. Now, one of the major signs that points to its timing is the occurrence of the abomination of desolation. Now, this abomination of desolation, this event, it's mentioned in several different passages. It signals that the Great Tribulation is about to begin, and it seems to happen right around the time when the beast power is set up. So let's go now to Matthew 24. Actually, hold your place here, because we'll come back to Revelation. And we'll go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 15 and 16. Matthew 24, verse 15 and 16. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. We're reading. Let's understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So the Great Tribulation and its associated events are directly preceded by the abomination of desolation being set up. Now, in history, going back, math, not my strong suit, so we'll say going back 2025 plus 168 years, you do the math, going back to 168 BC, that's when the historical aspect of this was fulfilled. That was the revolt of the Maccabean revolt, and Antiochus Epiphanes setting up the abomination of desolation in the temple. I think it was, the accounts differ whether it was being this thing sacrificed to Zeus or to Jupiter or whoever it was, but some pagan god in the temple, desecrating the temple. In the future, it seems to be commensurate with the time of the Gentiles. In fact, let's notice that in our Bibles now. We'll just go over to Luke 21. Luke chapter 21, and we'll look at three verses here in Luke 21. Luke 21, we want verse 20, 22, and 24. Can't remember if I'm going to come back here, so I'll put a marker there. But Luke 21, verse 20, 22, and 24. Luke 21, verse 20. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then wonder? Guess? No! Then no, its desolation is near. Verse 22. These are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Verse 24. And they will... It talks about great distress coming on the land, wrath upon the people. It says, they will fall by the edge of the sword, be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, we know, especially lately, Israel often in the news. They're just a wee country. Why are they always in the news? Rhode Island's a small state. They're never in the news. Why is Israel in the news all the time? There always seems to be a war, a fight, some altercation happening with Israel. Now, Jerusalem deliberately not surrounded by armies. We tend to think of armies coming to destroy. I mean, that's what I think of. Mr. DeCampis, George DeCampis, a member of the Council of Elders, pastoring down in Texas, he gave a sermon, and he said one idea that it could be doesn't necessarily have to be an army coming to conquer or destroy. It also could be potentially a UN peacekeeping army that's there to promote peace. So it could be either way, but it will be an army of some sort that is surrounding Jerusalem. So we do want to allow for that and allow God some wiggle room to work out some of these end time events however he wants to work them out. We should always remember that. You could also reference Ezekiel 30, and that talks about the time of the Gentiles affecting and impacting the entire world. Because remember, the last year of the Great Tribulation and of the time of the Gentiles is wrath of the Lamb. Now, how do we know that the time of the Gentiles is 3.5 years? Because it just says here in Luke, times of the Gentiles. Where do we get the 3.5 years from? Well, let's go back to Revelation now. Back to Revelation chapter 10, because we want to know for sure. We don't want to just take anybody's word for it. We want to prove these things for ourselves so we understand. Because we know Jesus Christ returns here. Right? Here he is. This is his return. I know he's returning. I don't know the day, but I know he's coming back right here on the timeline. How can I count? Well, I can only count back from his return. So I can say, well, if he's returning here at year X, well, 3.5 years prior is when some of these things are kicking off, right? So when it's happening, it's a little too late to repent, because then you're in it. I mean, you've either repented by that point or you haven't, and that's something we'll also talk about in the second part of the sermon this afternoon. But we do have some markers. We just don't know the date of his return. We can only count backwards. So Revelation 10, verse 7. Revelation 10, verse 7 and 11. Verse 7. In the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, in other words, he has not yet sounded, so Christ has not yet returned, but he's about to, so it's the end time, which is what this whole book of Revelation is about. When he's about to sound, the mystery of God would be finished as he declared to his servants, the prophets. Verse 11, and he said to me, you must prophesy again about many peoples, nations, tongues, kings. So here we have the timeline. We're given the time frame here, so we're not confused. Did this already happen in the past? No! Christ's return wasn't imminent 1,000 years ago. Not shortly, by the way, we think. Chapter 11, verse 3, verse 1 through 2. Chapter 11, verse 1 and 2. Then I was given a reed, like a measuring rod. And the angel stood, saying, rise, measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. But leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to, notice, the Gentiles. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. 42 months. 1,260 days. Or 3.5 years. What else is happening during that 3.5 years? Notice the next few verses, verse 3 through 6. I will give power, and I will give power to my two witnesses. They will prophesy. How long? 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. If anyone wants to harm them, notice, fire proceeds from their mouth, devours their enemies. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. These have power to shut heaven, so no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. And they have power over water, to turn into blood, to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they desire. You want to talk about two deeply converted members of the Church of God. That's these two witnesses. These are direct representatives of God. A lesser man would, you poke me in the eye, I'm going to poke you right back. Start talking, may retaliate out of anger. These two witnesses are not going to retaliate out of personal self-aggrandizement or out of personal self-gain or to glorify themselves. Make no mistake, they will be sad when they have to retaliate and do some of these things. They won't want to be hurting mankind. They will be working under direct inspiration and guidance from God, but they won't enjoy hurting people. They won't enjoy, they won't be thinking that they're getting vengeance on them for themselves or their own revenge. They're going to be operating on God's behalf. And so they are going to need to be deeply, deeply, deeply converted individuals. So it's not just going to be random people. It's going to be members of the Church of God, the God whom God is preparing for that position, for that role, who have the, what do they say, chutzpah, to be able, the metal, to be able to carry out those functions. And we should also notice, amidst all these terrible end time events, all these things taking place at the end of the age of man, we notice that God desires to show mercy. These are wake-up calls. This is the final chance, and he's like, I'm sending my witnesses. Wake up! Look at what they're doing. No one else can do those things. Wake up! And that's God lovingly correcting, his children, trying to get our attention and the world's attention. Let's go back to the book of Isaiah. Back to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 26. Isaiah 26, Isaiah 26, verse 20. Come, my people, enter your chambers. Shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation is past. For behold, the Eternal comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth will also disclose her blood and will cover no more her slain. Verse 1 of chapter 27. In that day, the Eternal, with his severe sword, great and strong, will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent. Leviathan, that twisted serpent, and he will slay the reptile that is in the sea. Throughout the last years, God is exacting judgment on the nations. He is establishing dominance over his creation as he prepares to depose Satan from his position of influence over man's affairs. Often Leviathan is a representation of Satan in the Bible. A sea, a big body of water, often is a representation of the Gentile people, or even sometimes just people. Now, during these last 3.5 years, the Church of God is given shelter in a place of protection, a place of safety, in her place. Now, we also have a period of 1,290 days mentioned in the book of Daniel. So let's go over there. Let's go to Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12. Daniel 12, right at the end of the book, verse 11. Daniel 12, verse 11. Actually, we're going to do verse 10. And 11. Verse 10 and 11. Talks about, let me rephrase here. Let's just begin in verse 9. Because Daniel, he's hearing these things, he's seeing these visions, he's writing these things down, and he's saying, well, I don't understand these things. Right? In verse 9, he gets some words, and he hears, go your way, Daniel. These words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. In other words, you don't need to understand. You're going to be dead long before these things happen. And he says, many shall be purified, made white, refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Traditionally, we have taught, and some scholars also have suggested, that this additional 30 days is a time when the Church of God will flee to her place in the wilderness. So it's probable this would coincide with the fulfillment of the prophecy in Hosea 5, verse 5 and 6, with the fall of Israel and the United States and the UK and those nations over the course of a new moon or a month or 30 days. Now, some have, some do argue that these events have already occurred or are happening right now. But we have to, if we want to be accurate about this, we want to look at the scope of the prophecies, and we want to look at the nature of the prophecies. Because these prophecies that we're reading are not localized events. These are not things that are confined just to a specific group of people or just to a specific church. These are events which concern the entire world. These are events which will impact the entirety of humanity, not just a couple nations in some place. People will say, well, maybe it's the Bolshevik Revolution, or maybe it's the Holocaust, or these other things. Those are just localized areas. Those are not the worst time that has ever come upon all of humanity. Because at the end of that worst time that ever came upon humanity, Jesus Christ returns, and he isn't here. Right? I mean, I feel like that's very plain, but there's a lot of people who don't agree with that. But he isn't here. I mean, he's living in us, but he's not here. He's not ruling. His kingdom's not here. Satan's not locked away in a pit somewhere. Right? I mean, that's going to happen. But it's not yet. Let's not forget the scope of these things. You can note Mark 13, verse 20, and I'll just quote it for you because I have it written down here because this is proof. Is it happening now? Has it already happened? Let's just read. Well, you can read. You can write it down. I'll quote it for you right from the New King James Bible. It says, Mark 13, 20, unless the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh. What's contained in no flesh? No flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Has it happened yet? No. Is this the worst time ever in history right now? No. It will be. I've talked to a lot of people who are deceived on this point. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Big question. Who's going to be there? Stick around for the announcements. We'll get to that in the second part of this split sermon.